Yeah, hi
Hi,
Sue.
it's great to be with you again.
Likewise.
Oh man, what are we gonna? You're moving to Vermont in a couple months. How are we gonna do this? We're not gonna be able to be in the same room.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'll be sad though. I'm gonna advance sad right now. I'm feeling some advance. Are you feeling any sadness?
Yeah, but I don't think you can feel advanced sad. I think you can only feel sad now.
Okay, I feel sad now for the future.
You might be sick of me by then. Who knows?
That's a really good use of my time to feel sad for the future. All right, well, everyone, welcoming all your feelings for the present or the future. Welcome to the Hey Sue podcast. As you all know, this is a live, unscripted executive coaching session for someone who's working in the business world, a leader or some other contributor to some business somewhere. And I'm being very vague right now because this is our first, hopefully of many episodes, where we have an unspecifically identified person. We're joined today by Ryan, and Ryan's bio is he's our guest today for the Hey Sue podcast. Welcome, Ryan. We're so happy to be with you.
Hi, it's my pleasure to be here.
How did we end up deciding that Ryan was going to be his first name?
That's a good question. I think I've known Ryan for a little while now. We met recently in a coaching conversation. And Ryan, one of the reasons I asked you to be here is I experience you as self-aware and willing to ask yourself hard questions. And that makes for a pretty good coaching conversation. So I thought one of the reasons to have this conversation together in an anonymous way is we could shed all the baggage of what you do and who you work for and not be caught up in that and let you be free to be as honest and vulnerable as I've experienced you to be without being conscious of what people might be thinking about you if they knew your full identity and workplace and all that.
Do you agree with that, Ryan? Does that make sense?
Yeah, sounds wonderful. I'm shopping for coaching starting this year. And so I was putting out some feelers for coaching, and I thought on from my side that this was a wonderful way to get some more experience of what coaching could be. I've been in therapy before, but I've never had a coach. My dad suggested I find a coach, and he's very wise, so I'm
Did you ask your
taking
dad
that.
why he wanted you to find a coach?
Didn't ask him why. He has one, and so probably he's just thinking, "Oh, it's been so good for me." And Ryan has a lot of the similar values and goals as me, so maybe it'll be good for him too.
Is your dad being wise the only reason you're opening up to coaching, or is there another
No,
reason?
I think I was interested in it anyways. I think the reason that made me think about it is sometimes I'll be in like a bit of an unproductive funk, unproductive, loaded word there, I guess. But I mean, like doing less of the things that I think my higher self wants to do for like, weeks on end. And then sometimes I'll get out of it and I'll be like, that really wasn't that hard to get out of. It's just that there's no one in my life whose role it is to get me out of that. Like my partner's role is, more of like an emotional support role or something, but she's not as invested in like me meeting my sort of like personal f life fulfillment goals as someone like a coach I imagine would be. So I've had a few times where I'm like, man, I should just get a coach because that way I can spend, just a couple days in a funk or something instead of like a couple weeks in a funk.
I'd love to get an understanding of your higher self. Can you tell me about him?
Sure. I think that in terms of like some values of mine that I feel like show up, one would be. But being creative is like a big part of what makes me feel alive, I'll say. So I think that like when I'm living life to the fullest and feeling really fulfilled and feeling like I have a lot of agency, I'm doing creative things.
Yeah.
But it can be easy for me to have thought patterns that are like, oh, this idea I have isn't that really that good, or just like, man, I'm like so far behind on like where I'd like to be right now. And so, and I'll just dwell on that and obsess on that. So in contrast, like making stuff, I'm thinking about the thing I'm making. I'm not thinking about, you know, my place on a leaderboard or
gotcha.
A map or anything like that.
Okay. So in your lower self is thinking about the leaderboard and judging you. Self-judgmental, is that?
Yeah, I think
so. Tell me more about your lower self.
Self-judgment, and also like being really nitpicky. Like there's this fine line between, I think it's good to be strategic. Like I like being strategic, but I feel like there is also an analysis paralysis kind of thing that I can also fall under, where I feel like I can only spend my time on something if it's like the best possible way for me to spend my time.
Okay. And then these periods of funk that you described, can you tell me what you love about them?
What I love about my funk? That's a good question.
Or even just like, good
yeah,
point.
Yeah. Like, well, I think I can get to a love if I just wait a little bit more. I can find like a deep catharsis in like a really low self-pitying, listening to Sufjan Stevens and curling up on a ball on the couch. That could, sometimes I think that maybe I had this funny conversation with my wife where I was like, I think my emotional core is sadness. And she's like, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, well, I feel like when I think about who's my best friend, the first thing I think of is like, if I was at my lowest low, who would I talk to? Which is interesting, because I was like, probably other people don't think of it like that. Like probably other people think about, if I was at my highest high, like who would I go talk to or something like that. So I think, but anyways, I do think that sometimes when I am in a funk, I do kind of enjoy the sense of, it's almost, I'm thinking of like Wind in the Willows, that movie when there's like the kind of grumpy toad person or whatever that lives in the ground. There's a kind of undergroundness of being in a funk that's kind of satisfying.
This is a quick tangent, but I'm curious, Sue, how you know who your best friend is. I'll just share mine. I noticed when you said that, mine is the person I feel like I can be myself in all my flavors around.
Yeah, mine is I'm imagining myself on a very specific couch that a friend of ours owns. And I imagine myself just leaned back and just the conversation is just flowing through my body and my consciousness. And I'm not trying at all.
Like no control.
Yeah, I'm not facilitating. I'm not pushing the conversation. I'm just like luxuriating in everyone else's noise around me. Yeah. Why'd you ask?
Well, I just thought it was such an interesting reflection. I'd never thought about that, how I know who my best friend is.
Yeah,
I liked that prompt.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering about the connection as you see it between your higher self and your lower self. If you see a connection.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And actually, can we just say what you call your higher self? Because actually, when you described it, it didn't sound like your higher self. It actually sounded to me a little bit like a drill sergeant that has a bias towards productivity.
Interesting. I actually do have a name, I think, a new name for this, Merlin. There's certain characters that I think of from movies when I think of like this version of myself that I really like, which the first one that jumps into my mind is Fujimoto from Ponyo, which is a movie by Studio Ghibli. And he's this very esoteric, weird guy who I imagine is just totally in his own world and expressing his creativity to its fullest. I also think of Hayao Miyazaki. I have a story that Hayao Miyazaki is just super dedicated to his craft and like at the top of his field and like very creative and not like the opposite of a couch potato, which is, I think, the lower self, call him Gary, and he he's on the couch all day, every day. He's never actually left the couch. He's never created anything original or anything at all, really. And what he does is he goes on TikTok and he somehow his algorithm is all people being creative, even though every single time what he does is he opens the comments section and he says, this is stupid and lame. And he just does that, just leaves hateful comments and farts a lot and eats nothing but cheese all day. That would be the most exaggerated characterization of my lower self.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering if you knew for a fact that Miyazaki doesn't have funks.
No. That's why I was careful to say I have a story that Miyazaki, it's like, it's probably, yeah.
You saw The Boy and the Heron, I assume?
Yeah, although, yeah, ironically, I didn't actually love it that much.
I don't know if you could create that film if you were a person who never had funks, but that's also just a story. Mm. Oh, and also, the person who does our show notes is going to be really busy. So thanks a lot, Ryan. okay, so what is there a relationship between Merlin and Gary?
I'm not sure exactly. Do you mind saying a little bit more about what you mean by relationship?
How do they treat each other?
Good question.
Another question I have is, do they rely on each other at all?
Mm. Well, intuitively, where my mind is going first is I'm thinking, I wish I was Merlin all the time, and I wish that I starved Gary out of existence for long enough that he died and left my body.
And now we know your relationship with Gary.
Yeah, that's my relationship to Gary.
No more cheese.
I do think that there's some aspect where Gary is helpful to me in that, or helpful to Merlin in that. There's this one project I worked on where I started it in high school and I would have these like flurries of activity where I worked on it. And it took about 10 years from start to finish until I like, quote unquote, finished it. And it was definitely like one of the highlights of my career and like creative life that I pulled this thing off. And I wrote a little mini book about like my process on it because I wanted to remember it for later. And one of the things I wrote in it was like, oh, I'm so glad that I had years where I didn't work on this at all because it improved so much when I wasn't working on it for a while and I was taking my time to develop my point of view on it. And what I ended up having to do is, or I shouldn't say having to do, but what I ended up doing was cutting like huge parts of it and, you know, redoing from scratch, like several aspects of it. And so I do think Gary is kind of helpful as a field researcher and a collector of notes and a reflection engine.
One of the things I'm hearing, I'm going to say it and you can reflect if this resonates with you. It seems like in your system, whether it's Merlin or you, Ryan, or someone else, but there's a bias towards productivity. If I'm producing, good. If I'm not producing, bad. So if I were Gary and I was living in that system, knowing that productivity or creativity requires periods of pause, of reflection, of not thinking about it, of in nature, creativity requires winters and compost and times where trees aren't bearing fruit, that's part of the creative process. So if I were Gary living in that system and I wanted to support your creativity, I would need to require downtimes. And if I'm fighting against people like Ryan or Merlin that don't have tolerance for downtimes, I would have to really exaggerate what I do in order to get him to curl up in a ball on a couch, just to get him to stop.
Yeah, totally. That reminds me of some like quantified self journaling stuff that I've done. And I remember sometimes like I'd have these Saturdays or Sundays where I would start the day and be, or, you know, Friday going into the weekend, I'd be like, okay, it's the weekend, I can finally do like XYZ side project thing I wanted to do. And then on that day, I would end up like doing, you know, watching TV and stuff, just relaxing. And then I would go to my little quantified self journal thing and realize it's like, I've actually been really like on like all week. And I've actually only, you know, relaxed once a week for the past month. And so on Saturday, like it sometimes in those, on those relaxation days, when I didn't intend on relaxing, it felt like a disappointment. But then when I looked at it in retrospect, it's like, oh, I'm actually like, I recognize the role of resting. And I noticed that there's a pattern that even when I'm not resting very much, it still feels indulgent to like rest at all to me.
So one thing I'm noticing is there's, let's call it a higher self or a higher awareness that can sort of do the math on all these things and have perspective. But there's some aspect of you, and I actually think it may be different than Merlin, some kind of persona, some aspect that has zero tolerance for rest or breaks. So it's not you that judges it. It's this part doesn't accept it.
Yes. And what is like jumping in my brain now is that I think something which has come up in conversations with like my coworkers and also my therapist and also my wife and also my own journaling, which I think is related, is this idea of low self-esteem. I think I have low self-esteem. And I think that the reason this is relevant and related is because I think that the reason why I feel like I can't do any rest or I should be productive all the time is because I feel like I have not yet become valid Ryan yet. And until I become valid Ryan, I shouldn't be resting on my laurels or being complacent, because like,
given this infrastructure that you're describing about these modes that are in your mind, and I would agree a predilection for productivity, do you actually imagine, and maybe looking at your dad, like, is there a time when you imagine you, Ryan, would feel like you have arrived?
There have definitely been some moments where I felt like really good, like in this way. One was actually really recent, which is interesting. But well, first of all, when I was younger, I didn't think about this stuff at all. Like in high school, by the time I was a senior, at least, and I had sort of figured out what I was interested in, I felt really secure, I think, in my identity as like a creative guy. I went to art school, and then there's a little bit of a reset because there's some, you know, it went from being the one art kid at my high school to being one of 400 art kids at art school. But then by the time, it didn't take me long to sort of find my identity with that community. And I remember in particular, I was organizing this workshop, and I really wanted to find a badass guest critic to come for the final critique of this workshop. And I remember there was like 5, 6, 7, like there was maybe a dozen people I reached out to, and like no one returned my emails. And then finally at like 2 a.m. after what felt like, you know, a brick wall, and just like running through a brick wall, finally someone replied and said they would do the critique. And I remember laying in my bed at like 2 a.m. and thinking like, I did it, I made it happen. And I remember at that moment feeling like, okay, this is like, I'm gonna bottle this feeling and save it for later. This is like me feeling super powerful and free at the same time. There have been other moments, but I feel like it might be unnecessary for me to regale all of them.
In that moment, you were feeling powerful. Do you equate that with high self-esteem?
I think they're related. I don't know if I would say, I don't know if I would equate them, but they're probably like correlated, I think.
And when you have those feelings, when you've had them either that time or other times, it sounds like that one of those times was recent. What happens after one of those feelings? Is there, mm-hmm. is there a pattern?
I'm trying to think. Well, the most recent time it happened, I've been working on this side project and been looking forward to this milestone of making a video about the mile, like where the project is at. And one of these videos like went kind of mini viral on Instagram. And I've never had that happen before. And it felt like very validating because all these people were, you know, saying very positive things about it. And I was proud of the work too. And people are also, I was also getting haters too, which is also kind of enjoyable for me in a weird way.
You found other Garys to react to you.
Yeah, exactly. That actually helped me a lot too, to be on the other side of that equation. Realize how silly it is. But yeah, not answering the question yet about what happened after. I remember during the moment. Well, so first of all, there is the video being well received, but there's also filming the video is extremely gratifying because it was a street interview thing where I was demoing this contraption I made. And so I was meeting people on the street and going up to them and showing it to them. And in some cases, they were like, really blown away, but this thing worked or whatever. And that was very gratifying. And I remember in the moment thinking like, man, this feels so good. How can I bottle up this feeling for later and remember it when I'm feeling like low self-esteem or something like that? Can I just remind myself that sometimes I feel this way? But I did feel like a sense of like, man, bracing myself for the impact of like next week or whatever, or in the days after this, like feeling maybe fulfillment whiplash, if there is such a thing. Yeah. Yeah, I do feel like when I'm not currently actively like doing something creative or taking some sort of risk or, you know, making some sort of progress towards these goals of mine, it is hard for me to like feel fulfilled.
So I think what you just said is probably incredibly common, that a lot of us have inherited this mindset that my worth, my goodness, my value, my self-esteem is dependent on what I create, what I produce, what I succeed at.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that association, especially if it's not seen for what it is it will create this kind of roller coaster you've been on, where if that's what I need, then I have to keep chasing it to keep feeling okay. And the whiplash is actually being left with who you are in the moments where that's not happening. And as you have already pointed out, getting to start to know your relationship with yourself, your judgment of yourself, if you are just who you are without you as the producer or creator. And I imagined when you said at the beginning, you know, I'd want a coach to help me be accountable.
Get me out of my funks.
Yeah. If I were your coach, or any good coach would actually go in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think what I want is to not feel horrible about this pattern or whatever for the what feels like a destructive pattern to end. But I don't think I'm actually. Well, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I do have a certain amount of capitalist brain rot that needs to be exercised before I can.
Even the way you just described it, one thing I'm struck by, there seems to be a lot of harsh judgment of your different parts or your quote unquote brain rot. That's actually, we've culturally, especially in the US, so we talk on this show sometimes about the Enneagram, and I've heard it said that the US is an Enneagram 3 culture. And what that means is we live in a culture of I'm loved for what I do, or how I show up. That's kind of the Instagram culture. Like if I'm seen as producing or I'm seen as attractive in some way, then I'm loved. And as a culture, we're steeped in this mistake. So one thing I'm wondering about is maybe not at the fullest extreme of Gary, but somewhere close, balled up on the couch, not producing, watching TV on a Saturday. In those moments, what's lovable about you?
I think that one thing that I like about myself, detached from productivity, is my quirkiness or like playfulness and my sensitivity. One thing I'm thinking of is I opened my journal that I have recently. I kind of was doing this quantified self-journaling stuff, and I
Can you say
opened it
what
up.
that means, quantified self-journaling?
Yeah, what I mean by that is I have this grid of these the threeness of it is overwhelming. I have this grid of each day and each of my different sort of values. I've kind of bundled values into these types of days that I think I have, like healthy bean day is a day where I am exercising, and it's a sort of combination of my values. And then I also have a get shit done day, which just means I'm taking care of things that I want, that I need to do, that I don't necessarily want to do. And then there's the glorious studio day, which is the day that I think means the most. And there's rest day, what happens sometimes. I track it because it's inevitable, but I don't really. I hope I do sometimes try to make rest day happen more when I'm going on vacation.
In your quantified journal, do you rank all of those values equally?
No. It's more about like a reflection. It's more about like surfacing the data, like, and reflecting on it in a kind of open-ended way. As opposed, and I do sometimes, and the way that I approach it is like I'll recently at least is try to frame it as sort of like experiments, like what happens if I have twice as many healthy, or if, what if I have like,
Yeah. How do you
every
feel?
other day is
Yeah.
a healthy bean day or something.
With
And
all due respect to the name of your journal process, I think it's a misnomer. I think this sounds like a qualitative journal to me.
okay.
Yeah,
Yeah.
which I mean, actually, I think plays into a very similar thing that we've been talking about, which is welcoming the qualitative into your life more with less attention to some. What I hear is there are these various judgments that X is better than Y, and the X is always more creative, more active, more productive, more quantitative, more provable, whatever all of that is, and then creating a polarity with the thing that is perhaps qualitative, like rest, restoration, whatever it is, the TV that you were talking about watching. And that there's some part of you that just wants to X out all of that in you. It, not all of it, because you see that you like that you're quirky. That's really qualitative. That's a lovely quality of yourself. But I don't know, when I'm listening to you, I just keep, as I've been listening, I just keep hearing a lot of focus on binary thinking, that I'm either this or that. It's either a studio day, which is manna from heaven, or it's a rest day, which you're only allowed to have on vacations. And it just feels like a lot of forced polarities that don't feel legitimate to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine serve you, I guess. I mean, it serves the system that you have for it being somehow able to compute how excellent you are. And my other story is that you've got a racket going where I used to have this, this is a bit of a tangent, but I'll just go there. With some of the female, very senior people that I've coached in my career, I noticed a pattern that many of them wanted to perform at about 25% above the level at which they were being compensated. They always wanted to perform at that level. So if they got a raise or they got a promotion to a bigger title, they still wanted to perform 25% above the bar. And the reason they wanted to do it is because they had perhaps an inferiority complex or some kind of internal self-doubt. It felt like insurance, like that 25% slug is just an insurance against being a failure. You're very unlikely to see me as a failure if I'm overperforming as much as I ought to be in my system. And there's a part of me that just hears you do that, that it's some kind of a hedge against your own insecurity. Instead of what Leah, I think what I hear you suggesting, which is to be more welcoming about all of the parts of you, the ones that are quantifiable or provable and the ones that are not.
Yeah. What that makes me think of is, I relate to that as an aside, and I don't know if it means anything, but I think that most of the people I relate to and am friends with are women for one reason or another. I don't know why. But it just seems to happen. I have friends.
There are too many inappropriate rejoinders to that comment that I have just withheld. I just want to get some credit for it. I've withheld all of them.
I have to say I'm curious now, but I will honor your...
I'm not withholding them. Okay, back to you, Rob.
Yeah, so I guess it doesn't surprise me if you think I fit this pattern.
Mm.
But I almost feel like for me, it's like... I think... it feels like it's much my, I feel like I'm doing the 20% extra, but I feel like my goal for myself is like top 10 of all time that have ever existed or else it'll be disappointment.
And yeah, this like, you're on an infinite loop here. Like there is no way. I mean, it doesn't matter whatever the quantifiable response you get in your journal. My story is it should always be X percent higher next week. This is just an infinite pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds not very friendly.
I think that I've probably written down somewhere, like my goal is to be in the design history book or for Phaidon to like publish a monograph of my work because it's like so significant and groundbreaking and, you know, unitary. And I feel like if I don't achieve that kind of a goal, or like one of my professors had a Netflix documentary made about her work, and I feel like, okay, if I do that, then I can prove that I'm like a great designer. And unless I do that, I'm a disappointment designer. And it's very hard for me to even separate that from Ryan as a human.
I imagine you know that if either of those things became true, that wouldn't do a thing to touch your insecurity.
I kind of know it, but I also don't fully believe it because there have been like milestones I've reached. Like I got a job at a prestigious company, and there, I remember there was, when I got that offer, I was like, okay, I did it. I finally did it. I made it. Woo, that feels, weight lifted off my shoulders. Now, of course, eventually I raised the bar after that, but it did kind of feel like maybe a course of chemo for the cancer of this infinite treadmill I'm on. It's like, kind of, it felt like it abated it periodically. And
what
so
I hear is more like an eclipse. So you get approval, it blocks out the insecurity for a little bit, and then time passes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually having a new awareness in this conversation, which is something like, what do we do if we believe we're fundamentally unlovable? We probably come up with something to settle for second best. If I'm fundamentally unlovable, at least I can be successful, or at least I can be powerful, or at least I can be good, or these kind of goals that feel possible, to not have to face something else that's going on.
I love that.
So we're coming to the end of our time. And I'll just leave that for you, Ryan. I'm taking this question on myself and for anyone listening. What goals have we set for ourselves that we've accidentally used to distract from low self-esteem, insecurity, or a belief in our own unlovability if we don't achieve in that way?
Thanks, Leah. That's an amazing question. I just love that catch. It reminds me a little bit of the motivation of Hero on the drama triangle, that we're fixing things. It's like a short-term fix for a longer-term thing we don't want to be with. Yeah, often in others, but also ourselves. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us and just sharing so much about what your internal landscape sounds like. I've gotten a lot from listening to you. Thanks for being with us. And for all of you listeners out there, we've got some notes on some of the things that Ryan referenced in the show notes. If you want to go watch some good films, there'll be good references there for you. And thanks for joining the Hey Sue podcast once again. We'll be here soon with another live coaching episode with someone else or you. If you want to join us, please let us know. You can reach me at heysue.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. Take care, everyone.